time once again for Community Forum. And we are very lucky to have with us live in the studios this morning Helen Jacquard and Jerry Condon. Helen Jacquard is the Veterans for Peace Golden Rule Project Manager, and Jerry Condon is Vice President of Veterans for Peace, the national organization, and also with the Shore Support for the Golden Rule Project. Helen and Jerry, thank you very much for coming in and spending time with us this morning.
Great to be here, Mike.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you for having us.
So for those that don't know, the Golden Rule is a peace ship, was a somewhat famous anti-nuclear sailboat that has been resurrected. So maybe you can start out and tell us that story.
Thank you, Mike. First of all, I'd really like to thank Veterans for Peace, Greater Seattle Chapter, and Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action for helping us to be on the water right now. So the story of the Golden Rule is that in 1958, there was a lot of concern about the atmospheric nuclear bomb testing in the Marshall Islands and Waitak and Bikini Atolls. And what was happening as a result of these atmospheric nuclear bomb tests was, for one thing, strontium-90, which does not exist in nature, was being produced by these explosions. And the radiation from that was getting into babies' teeth and bones via mother's milk and cow's milk because it acts like calcium. So Dr. Benjamin Spock, the famous pediatrician, was concerned about it and writing about it. And people all over the world were concerned about it because this was blowing all over the planet. Mothers were measuring the radioactivity in their milk at the time. And sometimes when I talk about this, people in the audience, especially the older women, are going, yeah, I did that. Or, yeah, I sent my baby teeth in to be measured. One of the other background pieces of why this was going on, of course, was the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the captain of the Golden Rule at the time had quit his commission as a Navy officer a month before he could have received full retirement pay out of protest of the bombings of Japan. Another thing that influenced them was when the Hiroshima maidens who survived those blasts came over to New York for plastic surgery, they were hosted by these same Quaker families that ultimately sailed this boat towards the Marshall Islands. So they tried very hard to get this testing stopped through normal channels. They talked to Congress. They talked to the president. They wrote letters to the editor. They did protests, petitions, everything they could think of to raise public awareness to get this whole bombing program stopped. Ultimately, they failed and decided that they had no choice but to take Gandhian-style, nonviolent direct action, put their lives in danger in order to stop these tests. So they decided to buy this sailboat and sail it to the Marshall Islands. They were going to enter the testing zone and see if they could just get in the way. So they left San Pedro near Los Angeles and en route to Honolulu for supplies. The Atomic Energy Commission passed the Golden Rule, which was that no U.S. citizen should enter the Marshall Islands testing zone. So they made it to Honolulu, and when they tried to leave Honolulu with their new supplies, the Coast Guard stopped them and brought them back. And they put the captain in jail. Well, the next morning early, the first mate grabbed another crew member, and off they went again. And they made it to international waters. They thought they were going to do the voyage. But the Coast Guard decided to break international law and bring them back again. So the whole crew ended up in jail for 60 days. Everybody protested all over the country and indeed all over the world. Many of the people that we talk to during our educational presentations say, that was my first protest. My parents took me to protest against the arrest of the crew of the Golden Rule. And so this brought even more public attention to the issue of bombing the Marshall Islands. After the 1958, well, so in the same harbor at the same time arrived a boat, the Phoenix of Hiroshima, captained by Dr. Earl Reynolds, who had just spent 3 years in Hiroshima studying the effects of radiation on children. So he was very familiar with the whole issue of what this radiation could do from atomic blasts. And he and his family had just had a boat made, and they were sailing around the world for pleasure after his big research project. And so they were there at the same time. They knew about the crew of the Golden Rule. They didn't have anything else that they were particularly needing to do right then except continue on to Hiroshima, where they were already headed, to drop off their Japanese crew member. So they literally took the baton from the Golden Rule and did sail into the Marshall Islands testing zone. And everybody knew about that as well. So Dr. Reynolds was arrested. Their boat was forced back to Honolulu. And they didn't make it to Hiroshima right then. Later, I found Jessica Reynolds, his daughter, and she's been doing, you know, a lot of public speaking as a representative of both the Phoenix and the Golden Rule. So that's very special. After 1958, Bigelow, the captain, sold the Golden Rule, and there's not that much known about what happened in the intervening years. In 2010, the Golden Rule, along with a couple of other boats, was just drifting around in Humboldt Bay in Northern California. Irresponsible owner. The boats were tied up to a dock, and in a gale, the Golden Rule was smashed repeatedly against a piling on a pier and developed a huge hole in her side and sank. Leroy Zerlang, whose boatyard this boat was rebuilt in, drug her up onto the shore of his boatyard and said to his close friend, who ultimately became the restoration coordinator, Chuck DeWitt, he said, "Let's share a bottle of Maker's Mark and have a bonfire with this boat." So she was almost completely toast. Then he tried to sell her after he found out about what her history was, and Veterans for Peace in Humboldt Bay and Quakers and many others showed up and said, "Let's restore this boat." And they said to Leroy, "You know, just give us a year in your boatyard and we'll make this boat sail again and we'll put it back on its original mission." So 5 years later, in June of 2015, they launched the boat into the water again to much fanfare and with one of the Hiroshima maidens there to christen the boat. It was amazing. So now we're able to sail again for a nuclear-free world, only this time we're on an educational mission, and the restoration coordinator calls this boat a weapon of mass education. And it's a nice way to bring people that are not normally in the anti-nuclear movement into the fold to educate them, because it's a boat. So we can attract mariners and other people that are interested in boats and sailing, as well as Quakers who have a long history with this boat. And, you know, lots of other people are interested in the boat itself, and then they get interested in why we're sailing. So it's a wonderful tool for us to use and bring people in.
Yeah, so we had our first voyage last year. We sailed down to from Eureka in Northern California down to San Diego just in time for the Veterans for Peace National Convention, where the Golden Rule was a huge hit. And then we sailed back up the California coast, stopping in 10 different cities and having educational events, and were very, very well received. Got some good media coverage as well. And so this year we're actually on a 4.5 month voyage all the way throughout the Pacific Northwest. We left about 5 weeks ago from Eureka. sailed up the coast of Oregon into the Columbia River, up to Portland, and then up to Hood River. I had events in a number of places there. We were in Portland for the Fleet Week, and we're out there in the, giving a contrast to all the celebration of the Navy militarism with our boat, with which is hard to miss because it's the 34-foot catch, and it has bright red sails with a big peace symbol on the mizzen mast, and on the main mast is the logo of Veterans for Peace. So it's a very spectacular sight out on the water, and with a very clear message of peace and disarmament. So then we came back out the Columbia, across the bar, up the Washington coast, and I should say this is serious sailing. So we have volunteer captains and volunteer crews, and fortunately some very, very qualified people have helped us get this far. Then we of course entered into the Strait of Juan de Fuca, had a wonderful event at Port Townsend, and went to Poulsbo, and now we're here in the Seattle area. We were at the Wooden Boat Festival in Lake Union last weekend, and where thousands of people came by to see the boat, and we were able to have a lot of great discussions with folks and pass out a lot of literature, and Veterans for Peace had mobilized and had quite a few people out to help us, and that was very good visibility. That's one of four Wooden Boat Festivals we're going to be part of during our voyage, so we're reaching beyond the choir. We're also going to be at Wooden Boat Festivals in Vancouver, British Columbia, Victoria, B.C., and back to Port Townsend for their big annual Wooden Boat Festival, September 9th through 11th. We have an event here in Seattle tonight at University Friends, and that's at 7 p.m., right, Helen?
That's correct, 7 p.m.
And so we really encourage people to come out for that. And actually, the boat's going to be close by. We have an event this afternoon. At a picnic at Lake Forest Park, Log Boom Park, is it called? And what time is that?
That's from 1 till 3 p.m., and the boat will be there. So if people would like to show up and take a tour of the boat, and if the weather conditions permit us to, then we'll take some people sailing.
Yeah, then we'll be sailing up back into Lake Union in time for the event tonight, and we're going to be docking the boat at Ivar's, just down below where University Friends is. So we're going to try to have a relatively short program, so people can come down and see the boat. But it's going to be a good program, and it's going to have a number of very good speakers who are experts in nuclear weapons and nuclear power, which we're also opposing. And we're going to have the Seattle Peace Chorus there. Is that right? Or at least part of them. And so that should be great. And then tomorrow we're going to be taking people out sailing all afternoon. Anybody who's interested in coming down and touring the boat, seeing the boat, coming on board, checking it out, or actually going out sailing with us can join us at South Lake Union Park, right next to the Wooden Boat Festival.
Center for
Wooden Boats. On south, that's the southwest corner of Lake Union, and from noon until 8 p.m., we'll be taking people out sailing, so you're welcome to join us. Then we'll be proceeding on down the Sound. We have events in Bainbridge Island, Olympia, and other places in the South Sound before coming back up to Seattle in time for Seattle's Fleet Week, which is on Tuesday, August 2nd. And we're going to be that week at Pier 66 for the whole week, and people can come on board. We're hoping some sailors will come on board because the sailors are going to be in town. And we found at Fleet Week in Portland that they were some of the most receptive people to our message. They were very interested in the boat. We said, this boat tried to stop nuclear testing in 1958, and the sailors would go, "Wow, cool, that's great,"
It was before I was born.
Yeah, right. And then our biggest, perhaps our biggest, most profound action of the entire four-month voyage will be on Nagasaki Day. That's August 9th, Tuesday, August 9th. We're going to be sailing accompanied by a peace flotilla and kayaktivists right outside the Bangor Bangor Trident submarine base, which is, you know, 20 miles west of here. And that's, you know, there's more nuclear firepower at Bangor than anywhere else in the United States. And yet many people in the Seattle area are unaware that they're sitting at ground zero, basically. If there's a nuclear exchange, Seattle area is going to be one of the number one targets, if not the number one target. And people need to know about that. We're going to be collaborating with the Ground Zero Center for Nonviolent Action, who, you know, have a house and a piece of land right next to the Bangor base and share a fence with it, actually, and had ongoing civil disobedience actions for years, and will on that weekend as well. So we hope people will join us for that.
Yeah, this part of the country has a very rich history in terms of nuclear weapons and nuclear power, beginning with, you know, the Hanford Nuclear Reservation, where the plutonium for the Nagasaki bomb was created.
That's right. And, what we're finding is that Washington State has become increasingly militarized. I mean, it's kind of scary everywhere we go. Well, first of all, of course, there's all these struggles. At every port we stop in the Northwest, there's a struggle going on against coal infrastructure, oil infrastructure, natural gas infrastructure, where the whole communities, including oftentimes the city governments, are involved and winning struggles to resist these. But once we got to Washington, we're finding that people are more likely to be resisting the growler jets that are, you know, terrorizing people with a great amount of noise out of Whidbey Island. In fact, we're going to be going up to Coopville, and we're on Whidbey Island later on in August, hosted by a group that's resisting the growler jets. And then, of course, there's the Indian Island munitions center that we right outside of Port Townsend. We just did a sail by there with several other sailboats recently. And
then there's the Navy SEALs that are invading our parks and beaches, secretly playing hide-and-seek, and without the permission of the people, without the knowledge of the people, they're just landing on the beach and going up and hiding. And, I mean, imagine if you were walking in a park and suddenly you're surprised by a guy in full military garb coming out of the bushes.
So I wanted to get back to the Marshall Islands for a minute, because that's where this whole thing started, the bombing that was going on of the Marshall Islands. Well, the U.S. actually dropped 67 nuclear bombs on the Marshall Islands, including and exposed a lot of U.S. Soldiers, sailors, to those tests. We met one, the California commander of the National Association of Atomic Veterans, who was there at the same time that the Phoenix of Hiroshima arrived into the test zone, and he was personally exposed to 29 of those nuclear blasts. And most of those guys who were exposed to those have died of multiple cancers by now. But they are basically being used as guinea pigs without being informed of the dangers they were facing. That's yet to be recognized or fully compensated in any way. But the Marshall Islands, of course, experienced all 67 of those blasts, and they continue to have very high cancer rates. Thyroid cancer is big. A lot of people have had their thyroids removed.
And birth defects as well.
And they're also, you know, they're getting hit from all sides, because they're also one of the first victims of rising seas from global warming. And they're at risk of much or all of their islands disappearing underwater. And many of them have already left the islands. And are, in fact, there's quite a big community of Marshall Islanders in Salem, Oregon, and the Portland area. We were able to connect with some of those folks. Marshall Islands has taken a lead against nuclear proliferation. They last year filed a lawsuit against all nine nuclear powers, including the United States, and they're not asking for any compensation for for the damages, the severe damages that the Marshall Islands have suffered. What they're asking for is to hold all these countries accountable for the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which most or all of them have signed, and which requires them to negotiate in good faith to reduce and eventually eliminate all nuclear weapons. Well, that's not happening at all from any of these countries. Their nuclear proliferation is the name of the game. Right now, the United States, in fact, the Obama administration announced just several months ago a 30-year program that will cost at least $1 trillion to modernize the entire U.S. nuclear arsenal, every aspect of it, and that includes that so-called modernization. It actually includes developing new weapons, including what they call smaller, more accurate, more usable nuclear weapons, which makes the possibility of actually using these weapons
thinkable,
a greater threat. And at the same time that this is going on, of course, the U.S. and NATO is playing chicken with Russia in particular, and also confronting China in its own region. But right now we have, you know, the NATO conference that just took place where they announced, you know, very aggressive military posturing of U.S. and NATO troops along the Russian border, and U.S. So-called defensive missiles that are part of a first strike capacity. So the Russians are feeling very threatened right now. And, you know, in the meantime, at the same time, the U.S. and Russia continue to have many nuclear weapons on hair trigger alert pointed at one another. So the last thing we need is this confrontational posture on the part of the U.S. and NATO. And, of course, last thing we need is the permanent war situation that we are in so many parts of the world right now, which make the possession and the proliferation of nuclear weapons all the more scary.
And then, obviously, with $1 trillion going towards this proposed upgrade of our nuclear weapons, in a country and world that is desperate for, you know, focusing on just the basic needs of everyone. I mean, if you just focused on this country alone, infrastructure, you know, water, food, everything is totally falling to pieces.
Right.
You know, people homelessness is skyrocketing. So many issues that we could be focusing on that money and energy could be going towards,
yeah,
instead of nuclear weapons.
Including, like, investing serious money in renewable energy sources, which is what's really needed more than anything right now.
And speaking of that, one of the issues that we like to talk about is the issue of nuclear power and the fact that Washington State does have a commercial nuclear reactor that's providing power, including to Seattle City Light. And it's important to know that there's a petition to the legislature that's circulating right now, I-855, that calls for closing the Columbia Generating Station, as it's called. It was also called Whoops 2, Washington Public Power Supply System. And if you remember, the whole 5 nuclear power plant system produced the greatest bond default in Washington State's history. So because the Whoops 2 plant, the Columbia Generating Station, is the same design as what melted down at Fukushima, and because it's got other bad problems like earthquake faults right underneath it, and it's right on the Columbia River, which, of course, river courses change, it's really important to get this Columbia Generating Station closed as soon as we can.
Mm-hmm. So it becomes clearer and clearer to us as we travel with the Golden Rule and meet people who are involved in these community struggles for climate justice, that the climate justice movement and the movement to rid the world of nuclear weapons are intricately linked. And I think it's important that people become more aware that nuclear weapons and the possibility of nuclear war also remain an existential threat. That's why Veterans for Peace is so happy to have run into the Golden Rule, and the Golden Rule is now a national project of Veterans for Peace, because we've had anti-nuclear platform for many years, but we haven't really had a strong expression of that part of our platform, and so we're very excited about that. We want to, if people want to support the mission of the Golden Rule or just interested in finding out more about it, should go to our website, which is VFP, that's for Golden Rule, that's for Veterans for Peace, VFPGoldenRuleProject.org.
Yeah, just a few minutes left. And what other projects, Veterans for Peace has been doing a lot of great stuff over the years.
Right. We have quite a bit of things going on. The last couple of years we've been operating with this lens called Peace at Home, Peace Abroad. So we're trying to connect U.S. militarism abroad with the violence that pervades our own society. And we have, been expressing our solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, and many of our members have participated in those solidarity actions. We have a campaign now called Veterans Challenge Islamophobia, where a lot of the younger veterans in our organization, along with people in Iraq Veterans Against the War, are actually going out and challenging people like Donald Trump and others, publicly challenging their statements trying to divide and our society by targeting Muslims. We have here in Seattle, the Veterans for Peace just participated in the Pride Parade and passed out thousands of flyers in support of Chelsea Manning, the transgender whistleblower who's in prison now for a 35-year sentence for letting us know what was going on with the Iraq War. So we have a lot of activities, ongoing counter-recruitment, making the ties between militarism and the environment. We have our national convention is always a big deal, and that's coming up in Berkeley, August 11th, Berkeley, California, this year, August 11th to 15th. I encourage people to check out the local chapter, especially veterans. We need you. And the local chapter's website is vfp92.org.
I'd also like to remind people that we are solely supported by small individual donations. And if you go to vfpgoldenruleproject.org, there's a button you can use to go make a donation to us, and we would really appreciate it. This boat was done with the help of dozens of volunteers and hundreds of donors over 5 years.
That's right. We don't yet have any major donors or any major grants, so it's a volunteer effort, and we're trying to make it sustainable. So appreciate your support.
It's a labor of love. And very quickly, so the two events today?
The two events today are, one is at what time is
Log
that?
Log Boom Park in Kenmore,
okay,
from 1 till 3 p.m. and starting at 7 p.m. at University Friends Meeting, 4001 9th Avenue.
And then tomorrow we'll be in the water at Lake Union. If you want to go sailing with us between noon and 8 p.m., you can reach us at 206-992-6364.
Very good. Well, with that, we are unfortunately out of time. I want to thank you both very much for coming and spending time with us this morning.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Great to see you again.